Golf Weekly on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's Joe Molloy in my house. It is Nathan Murphy in his house, Fionn Davenport in his house, and Peter Laurie in his house. Hello, everyone. Hello, Peter Laurie.
Hello, Joe. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Peter, give us the latest on Spa. Well, I presume you've had to close for business and the driving range is in hibernation.
Unfortunately, yes. We closed there 24th in the afternoon after the Overadkris speech. So we closed up shop and we have an awful lot of work to do with the range closed now to kind of update it and do a good bit of work to it. So unfortunately, closed to the public, but still working away.
So you're still escaping to the range on a daily basis?
Yes, and maybe hitting the odd ball. And thinking about everybody.
If, Peter, I needed an escape, not that I could, from my family for a couple of hours, could I? Is there a secret knock I can give?
Yes, just send me a text and you can come on down. As long as you're keeping social distance, you're okay.
I don't want to hit balls. I just want to go lie down somewhere quiet for a while.
What I'd like to offer is to all our off-the-ball listeners who are stuck at home and in their back garden, if they're looking for a driving range mat to practice their swing onto, I have plenty there. So I'm sure if they direct message me on Twitter or whatever else, I can help them out.
Jeez, that's a very good offer. Very generous.
Did you give it back?
Yeah, that's the key question. You'll never see that mat again, Peter.
If they want to buy one or they want to rent one?
No, they just want to lend and then to keep it. You know that way?
Yeah, well, we knew they were going to charge them.
We can do lend as well, you know what I mean? So there's no problem.
There are a few tweets in. Actually, on the whole mat front, I have it here. Anthony O'Connell tweeted in, and his back garden setup is quite something. So he's got those goals for kids, like a soccer goal. And he has hung a mattress off the crossbar. And then he's got a little mat and he's just blasting the ball into that mattress. And it looks to be working very well indeed. That was a nice setup. We had a shout in from Katie Lally. Keep up the weekly podcast, lads. We're stuck in New Zealand. Golf courses are closed here too. But they did play Cape Kidnappers on Tuesday, which I've never heard. And then Aiden is in touch. Simple solution for the lack of crowds if they wanted to hold the Ryder Cup this year. Mic up the players and captains. TV viewership ratings would be huge. Not a bad idea. Fionn, how are you getting on?
I'm all right, thank you. We've slightly different restrictions than you guys have. I mean, nominally, we're meant to all stay indoors and not move out at all. But of course, Boris Johnson, in his desperate desire not to deliver any kind of bad news to the nation, allowed us to take exercise once a day. And we have obviously the right to go to the shops once a day and to go to the pharmacy or to the doctors. So I've been availing of the exercise. So I'm lucky enough that where I live, there's a kind of cycle running path that is part of the Transpennine route, which is a long distance route, so you can kind of go on it and do a big loop. So yesterday I did like a 16-mile cycle just in a loop, and it's brilliant because it's the one thing that's kind of keep me from going mad now that they've closed my golf course. So there was a few golf courses in my area that were availing of this exercise allowance and saying, look, you can go out so long as you either go out with people you live with or you can go out as a single. You can't go near the clubhouse. Just go out onto the course. No guests, no visitors, no anything like that. Just members. And you can play away, maintain social distancing. So I was kind of saying, like, that works for me. And then there was some issues on the local council saying that the golf course was abusing the parameters of these restrictions. So they said, look, we don't want to offend anybody. We certainly don't want any blowback. So they've decided to close the course altogether, which is understandable, but very, very disappointing still.
Yeah. The latest here, so the government made an announcement during the week. They escalated the measures in place, and that was followed promptly by a statement from the GUI and the ILGU. So they have advised that all golf clubs, practice facilities and courses on the island close with immediate effect until April 19th. And they say, while golf is an outdoor sport that allows players to exercise in the fresh air, the message is clear. People must stay at home to help to stop the spread of COVID-19. Most golf clubs had already stopped their, or had closed their clubhouses and ceased hospitality in recent weeks. But this is now the new advice. We'll get on to a couple of clubs in a moment who are continuing to allow players take to the course. But just on what this is going to mean for golf clubs, Peter, you were involved with Luttrellstown for a couple of years after you retired. There are 400 plus clubs on the island, and post the economic crash of 08, it was incredibly difficult for a lot of golf clubs. They're just off the back of a dreadful winter, lots of flooding and probably a lot, you know, lack of business in comparison with previous years. And, you know, interestingly, I saw a couple of clubs make the point that we might assume that subs, for instance, have been paid up for the year, but a lot of people are paying their membership via direct debit each month. Yeah, yeah. And so they're petrified, Peter, that that's going to go off a cliff now for obvious reasons, for starters.
Well, look, golf clubs survive with this subsidies when they come in, and then they work off green fees after that. And if that stops, they're really, really going to struggle to pay staff and whatever else. At least the government have stood in and said, right, we'll pay 70% of the, you know, the workers' wages, and, you know, you're meant to top it up by the other 30%, or you should do. Mm. However, the golf clubs, majority of them, will struggle. And a lot of them have been bleeding, and now they're really bleeding to death. What is an opportunity here, and we have to look at every cloud has a silver lining. It's an opportunity now for especially the resort courses to offer their facilities to general, you know, GUI members, ILGU members, to get them to play these golf courses, which they've never played before, because it's always been too hard to get onto and too costly. The likes of Ballybunion, the likes of Lahinch, Royal County Down, you could just list them off across the, because they are going to have nobody on the golf course. They've sold all their green fees up front for the year, so they're going to have a lot of availability, let's put it. But it is an opportunity for the golf courses of Ireland, and this is, yeah, Golf Ireland is just about to step in, is to rethink everything, is to step back and go, right, let's look at golf in Ireland. Golf in Ireland has been majorly expensive to a lot of customers coming on board, the Americans coming over and the Europeans coming over to play our golf courses and being charged exorbitant prices, which has been totally wrong in my eyes. So what they could do now is they say, right, let's get a structure fee right across the board, and actually try and get people to become members of golf courses and not just play around and play different golf courses at a very reduced fee. So now they have a chance to get more members at a price structure that would work for everybody. So you have, my opinion would be, you'd have your member rate, then you'd have your member guest rate, then you'd have your GUI rate, and then you'd have your visitor rate. So being a member, or GUI, Golf Ireland rate, should I say, if you are in that category, then you will want to be a member of a golf course and not just play social golf that's going around the place. So, as you said, they're all going to struggle, but this is the opportunity now to change things and to actually make golf more affordable to the average member of a golf course and give them the opportunity to get more members in and communicate with their members, which they have struggled to do in the past.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. In the short term, something I was curious about, when I paid my fee up front to Clancastle. I just do it at the start of the year, yeah, and try and rip off that plaster. So I've paid my membership for the year, and then I barely played this year because the weather's been so bad and Six Nations and stuff like that. I haven't had many free weekends. But in the main, like over the summer or even over the next couple of months now, I'd pay my €10 for the club competition. Then I'd go into the clubhouse afterwards and I'd have lunch and a cup of coffee and maybe a second cup of coffee if there was a good gang around and we were having a chat. And for me, that's, you know, I'm not a big boozer. That's like my real enjoyable leisure time. In terms of what's going to affect the clubs the most, from Luttrellstown, say, how much of the revenue is generated by just having the course open, having people buy food, stuff in the pro shop, just that flow of income on a weekend?
I'd say you're looking at probably on a members, it's probably about 80%, because on a Saturday and Sunday, because there's very few green fees going out. But during the week, we would probably switch to the other way around. But as you said, that's going to affect golf clubs hugely. But they will have an opportunity to recoup, you know what I mean, a lot of the losses going forward. So they're still going to survive, especially the strong ones, like Killeen Castle, which has a strong membership. People are going to pay up front. People are going to survive this crisis, please God, and they will come back to Killeen and play their golf. But you would have to look at the other golf courses around who rely only on their visitors. And these are the golf clubs that are going to struggle the most.
I think, just to pick up on what Peter's saying, is that, I mean, obviously, look, golf is seen by, I'd say, a vast majority of Irish people as a luxury endeavor, as something not necessarily to be overly concerned about in this time when there are a million other things that are seemingly more important. And that is absolutely true. But it is worth pointing out that golf is a significant contributor to the Irish economy in terms of as a tourism package. So, like, and it's something that Golf Ireland, which is only set up in the last couple of years, is really looking to take advantage of. And so I've got some because I wrote about this before, but so there are 200,000 overseas visitors who come to Ireland exclusively to play golf. And so that's what their draw is. Half of those are from the US. And each golf visitor from North America is worth, and these are late 2018 figures, so it's probably more, around €1,900 on average to the Irish economy, which is three times more than a leisure visitor. So altogether, the contribution of golfers from, as I said, primarily North America, but also elsewhere, is in the region of €300 million to the Irish economy. And so, and here's an interesting stat, is 80% of their spending is on non-golfing activities. So it's hotels, restaurants, bars, souvenirs, so on and so forth. So the idea that, of course, we're having a really tough time and golf clubs are going to have a tough time, but that some kind of maintenance fund would be required, not necessarily to safeguard the Killeen Castles or the Ballybunions or the Lahinches, who are obviously these marquee clubs in Ireland and have good solid memberships, but all these other smaller clubs that risk going under.
Yeah.
That is a real thing. And so, and it's not just, oh, we just want to help golfers out. It's, I mean, you can frame it in terms of, this is actually really a vital part of the tourist economy.
Yeah. Golf Ireland, as it will be known from January next year, have said they don't have the funds. So they're going to be lobbying to government. Because we are talking about here about, in the main, small and medium-sized businesses when we're talking about golf clubs. On the few exceptions, so in the Irish Times, Philip Reid was doing great reporting and talking to various different clubs for the Irish Times. And, you know, for instance, there was a quote from Dara Lyons, who is at Portsallan in Donegal. And he was saying, you know, summer months, that's when we stay alive effectively. So he said our green fee revenue is going to be down 50 to 75% this year. So that is the scale of the blow. There are a few exceptions. Rogenstown and Swords are staying open. Ian McGuinness is their managing director at Rogenstown. And he said that Leo Varadkar specifically said things like groups of four, outside exercise, can leave the house if you are going out for physical exercise. We have to preserve our humanity, which means taking exercise. He left the parks open, and to be honest, there will be less people on the golf course than there will be in the park. McGuinness stressed they had adopted a large number of health and safety procedures, including removing ball washers from the courses, removing flags from holes, placing them on spiked areas to the sides of greens, removing all rakes, disconnecting shoe cleaners, and so on, signs informing players, 2 meters distance, and all that kind of stuff. He said, if people are being responsible, it is the place to be, as far as I'm concerned. The positivity of the members on keeping the courses open has been brilliant. If the government comes around and says close, I will close, no problem. So they're going against the GUI advice at the moment, but they feel they're in keeping with the government advice. I mean, the one reservation you might have with that, Nathan, is ultimately the government advice is to stay at home as much as possible. a round of golf could have you out there for 4 hours plus. I do understand the point he's making about the nature of golf, which in some respects does allow physical social distancing, but ultimately the stay at home point is the key one from the government.
Yeah, it is if people are responsible, but the reason they're having to bring in more and more draconian measures is because not everybody is responsible.
Yeah.
Like, that's the unfortunate part of this. And it would be brilliant if golf courses could stay open. I know my own mother-in-law went out playing last week and we're kind of going, what are you doing? Like, you haven't left the house for 2 weeks, but now you're going playing golf. And she went out with a friend of hers and there was only the two of them, and they made sure they stayed opposite sides of the fairway, all of that, didn't go near each other. And I think it only sunk into her what was happening when they closed the golf club. She thought, well, I'm not going to have this one outlet for one day a week. So you would like that if possible. But unfortunately, can you guarantee at that golf club that every single member is exactly aware of all the regulations, that they're going to remember for a full 4 hour round not to touch absolutely anything? Like, maybe you get away with it, maybe it's perfectly fine. But I also just think as well, with the age profile of golf clubs, that it's quite often an elderly age profile, that I would have thought because of that reason they would have nearly been one of the first to shut down. Yes, if somehow you could figure it out that two people go out once every 25 minutes and there's absolutely no way that people are crossing in front of each other and that everyone does everything right, you're probably going to get away with it. But I just don't know if it's worth the risk. And listen, I understand that, like, the entire livelihood of many, many dozens of people per club are dependent on it. But unfortunately, that's every part of society. And, like, you're touching on Golf Ireland saying they don't have the money. Like, all these clubs are now just small businesses chasing that same small pot of cash. And I'd imagine that you could count probably on one hand the amount of clubs who are not going to be impacted, even the super clubs somewhere like Adair Manor, who maybe JP McManus dips into his own pocket and keeps things running and keep all the staff employed. But think of all the businesses in Adair who is, like, you touch on the type of person who comes to Adair Manor from America and how much money they spend in the local village. Like, everybody around golf clubs are going to be hit. And Peter's right, people need to try and take a positive from this and be innovative. But even listening to the government today, and they're talking about the recession that's coming after this already, compared to 2-3 weeks ago, where there was a sense of maybe we can just freeze the economy and in 4 months have a bit of a dip, but most people have kept their jobs and bounced back. Like, they're talking like this is going to be something that one of the steepest recessions we've ever had, and God knows how long it's going to last.
Yeah, it is depressing. I'm clinging to the hope that Dan O'Brien has painted at times of a V-shaped curve and a quick enough bounce back. But the longer this goes on, the scarier it gets for sure. They were saying 7% contraction this year alone, and that is on the basis, the ESRI, of 12 weeks of effectively an economy in hibernation. Who knows how long this lasts for is the problem. And that's what's facing golf clubs as well.
I think there's also, I mean, and I know this from my own case, is that when I heard that my golf course was closing, like, in my head, I can rationalize why it should stay open, because it suits me, because I want it to stay open, and I trust myself to abide by the rules. And it's an interesting thing that happened. It's a bit like, I mean, the manager of Rogenstown makes a compelling case, but, you know, Mike Ashley makes his own case to keep Sports Direct open, even though, like, of course it's dictated by absolute self-interest, you know? And, but, like, it's hard. I have to concede reluctantly. It's hard to see how golf courses, given the atmosphere that we're in, and as Joe, as you put it, where the obligation is on all of us to stay at home as much as we possibly can, to say, I don't know, but let's keep the golf courses open. You know, I have to concede that I think it's a good idea to shut them.
Yeah.
Do you think as well, sorry, Joe, just on, you touched on your membership there, that, like, depending on how long this goes, like, are people going to be looking for a refund on part of their membership? Like, I know, like, we're probably in a fortunate enough position, Joe, at the moment, in that, like, we're still getting paid. And my kind of attitude is, I'm going to keep paying the things I previously paid while I'm still getting paid. And if that changes, maybe then you look at what cutbacks you can make, so that it sort of keeps on feeding through.
Yeah.
That if this does go on more than 3 months, like, at what stage do people start looking for clubs to get some sort of a refund?
Me,
I
will.
They've started already.
Have they?
Yeah, they've started already. I've spoken to a few golf clubs and they've been inundated with phone calls saying, I want to freeze my membership. I'm cancelling my direct debit, and I'll put it back on.
And what's the club's answer to that? Because I know my gym, for instance, when it closed, said we're freezing your membership.
Right. So that's the kind of right thing to do, isn't it?
So what have the golf clubs been doing?
The golf clubs haven't made any decision as of yet. I think they've kind of pushed everybody away at this moment in time and said, "Oh well, you know, in the long term, we will come back to you." But right now, we'll just have to have a wait and see policy.
I presume, like the vast majority of golf clubs can't afford to just hand back what 6 months worth of.
Not a chance. Sure, they've spent the money already. Right. You know, you think about it. They've had this money wanting to come in since. You know, their last kind of major revenue was probably October, even September. And they've had very little money coming in. They've used this money up and, you know, this is money that they've already pretty much spent.
The thing is as well, you know, as Fionn said initially, golf is very much just, you know, it's one of the first things to go. So if we're heading into very difficult economic times, then when clubs come looking for renewals next year, it'll be back like with the crisis in 08, it'll be one of the first things which goes, and they'll be aware of that too.
Yeah, I think some of them. Go ahead, Fionn, sorry.
No, I was going to say, it's like, listen, the single thing to guard against when the economy goes south is a run on the banks. Like, everybody could just lining up to the bank and say, "Oh, I'm taking my money out." That will lead to the collapse of the banks. And so it is with the golf clubs. Nothing will herald the collapse of a golf club faster than someone saying, "Oh, I'm not paying my direct debit," or "I paid my fees up front. I want a rebate of 6 months," or whatever it is. Now, it would seem that, you know, force majeure will dictate. It's like, it's very difficult for, let's say, for the sake of argument. And I know that this is in the case of you, Joe, but because you paid your fee up front to Killeen Castle, that all of a sudden Killeen Castle are going to go, "Yes, we're going to pay all the members back 5 months' worth." But the direct debit issue is a very real thing. Like you, my gym just sent us all a text pleading with us not to cancel the direct debit, but that they will freeze the direct debits for the duration of their closure. And so it is. But here's the thing. I work for myself. I don't have a wage now. Like, I'm now living on that small pot of money that I have. And I have to make that last as long as this crisis endures. But there will come a time in a month or two or maybe three when all of a sudden, like, you know, do I really need Sky TV? Can I afford to pay my direct debit on my golf membership? And these are decisions I genuinely don't want to make. But this crisis may force me to make them. And I would imagine that there are tens of thousands, if not millions of people in a similar boat, not necessarily in Ireland, but all over, who have to kind of come to a sense where they have to do like their version of the run on the bank.
Yeah, well, we're not going to sort it out here. We'll be talking about this for weeks ahead. Let's see how it plays out. A few bits from the world of golf. So the US Open is still semi on, but effectively it's making contingency plans. I mean, the US Open this year, of all places, is in New York at Winged Foot. So as of Thursday, they had 30,000 plus cases in New York, to a lesser extent, Washington State. But New York is the epicenter of this thing. So the US Open is gone. Peter, we were wondering last week, if the world is moving again post-September, October, would you be in favor of them canceling whatever tournaments were due to be on around that time and just getting the four majors played off over 5-6 weekends?
No, I'd probably prefer to see, you know, you'd hate to see one major after another. It would dilute the major, I would have thought. I think we could play maybe one or two, but definitely not four over a very short period of time. Then we also have to look at whether the Ryder Cup is going to be played, etc., and how that is going to be picked. You know, it's virtually impossible now to pick a team that off rankings, because we've now had such a short season. Up to kind of March, there's been little or no golf, and we're going to have no golf pretty much up to probably, maybe, if we're lucky, July, and that's if we're lucky. So really, I would hate to see four majors played, but I'd like to see the Ryder Cup played at some stage, but there again, it could be postponed like it was during 9/11 and back to a year, every even year rather than the odd year.
you'd imagine it's going to be a heck of a power struggle when we do get some sort of a go-ahead, because every major is run pretty much by a different organization and the Ryder Cup. So the European Tour, their priority above all else, I'd imagine, is get the Ryder Cup played, because it basically will bankroll them for the next couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, that's their cash cow, yeah.
Exactly. And can they put their members in a position where they have no choice but to go and play it, even if it means it's some sort of, like they're talking about, which I don't think is right, Harrington and Stricker just picking 12 players. I sort of feel if you were to do that, you'd almost need to have a Ryder Cup next year again for the players who, like, who gets picked? Like, who does Harrington pick? Does he pick Bernd Wiesberger?
Like, no chance.
Because Bernd Wiesberger is probably going to qualify and would deserve to be there if it was a regular year. So, like, the easiest thing with the Ryder Cup is to just push it back. Is a Masters in October the same as a Masters in April when it's totally different conditions? Is an Open Championship in September?
I think they get away with the tournament, the Masters in October, all right. I doubt very much they get away with it, you know, early. Well, they won't get away with it in the middle of the year. But they said that October's not a bad time to play it.
Well, there's a little bit of sleuthing going on by Marina Alex, who is an LPGA pro, American golfer, 29, who had booked rooms in Augusta for the week of October 5th and received an email the other day cancelling the booking, but written in the... oh, I'm sorry you cancelled the room. And she's like, no. So she put out a tweet and said, I didn't cancel my room. You did. Your reason, this is ridiculous. Your reason was honoring already existing reservations. So obviously, you know, the date for the Masters is October 5th to 12th and are price gouging for a better rate. Complete BS. I want my room back.
That's interesting, because I was listening to a golf journalist who works for the Golf Channel, who similarly booked the Marriott near Augusta for that same week for €100 a night, whereas during the Masters it's $900 a night. And he got a similar email from the Marriott to say, we've cancelled your booking. So yeah, unless they've been tipped off that this is a possibility. I must say, Nathan, I do understand Peter's point about diminishing the importance of the majors, and it's not the way you would plan for the year. But I could not think of anything I would look forward to more than an October/November, the greatest month of golf of our lives. Four majors across 5 weeks. I mean, literally, I think I would just, I would take the 4 weeks off work, frankly. It would be too much. I'm all for it. I'm happy to watch on a cold October's evening the Masters, no problem.
Yeah, I think we don't know what our state of mind is going to be like in 6 months either. It could be a sense of people are ready for, as you say, just an absolute celebration of sport and the release that it should hopefully bring. Yeah, what I've seen is that, and again, like, because we're talking about America and the outbreak looks as though it's going to be so much worse in America. Apologies for the sound effects in the background. One child is currently throwing another child out of the sitting room for making noise. Now, granted, she's only 18 months old, so it's probably expected.
Well, I have one child just coming in wanting to know what's going on. So,
well, we all want to know what's going on.
There you go.
What I had seen was that they were saying beginning of July that the US Tour, PGA Tour, could come back. They play maybe one event and then go with the Open Championship and then get into that run of US Open, US PGA, building up to the Masters. And also, of course, including the Tour Championship, because the PGA Tour will need to make their book. Yeah. But it's hard to see going, and this, I think everyone's reading so much and trying to figure, it's hard to even think what June looks like right now, considering how America is dealing with this, how they get back to playing golf by the beginning of July.
And the PGA Tour is just so international. You will have people flying in from everywhere.
But Nathan makes a very good point in relation to... Sorry, Fionn. Nathan makes a very good point in relation to who has the picks and, you know, who has the power. And it's certainly not going to be the European Tour. It has to be the American Tour who'll decide pretty much what goes on and what kind of schedule is being played over the next 12 months. And therefore, you have the Olympics now postponed and going into next year, which is going to screw up the whole schedule next year as well, in a middle of the season. So it's, you know, it will be a power struggle, but America will be holding the wand and deciding what goes where.
A few they of just the players, need to push the Ryder Cup back, don't they? Sorry.
No, go on.
I was just saying on the Ryder Cup, I know nobody wants to admit it, and yeah, golf may be back by then, but if you can't have a proper qualification process, surely you just push it back a year.
I was just going to say, Tommy Fleetwood has come out to make that exact point. He has said, like, you know, maximum, we're going to have two majors played by the time the Ryder Cup comes around. That's not enough. Paul Casey said the same thing. There's a few think pieces over in the States saying, well, we're just going to have to give all 12 picks to Stricker and Harrington. I mean, if they go ahead with September 24th, which I think is the date, and the world is as it is at the moment, then they will have to let Stricker and Harrington just pick the teams from scratch. That's the only solution I can see.
Yeah, my question would be this. I realize that to us in Europe, the Ryder Cup is a big deal, but it doesn't make that big an impact on US TV audience numbers. Mm. Certainly, I imagine, well, at least two of the majors would be much bigger than that. So surely when deciding how to fill a truncated schedule, that like the Ryder Cup will be, if not fifth in the order of reckoning, or actually it could even be lower. It could be the FedEx Cup could take precedence. Certainly the four majors will take precedence. So is that not an issue as well? Like, I mean,
I would have thought the Ryder Cup's a huge deal over there, no?
No, it's not as popular as, well, it's not that big a deal. It's much, much bigger deal with TV audiences in Europe than it is in the US.
They don't need the money as much as Europe needs the money from the Ryder Cup. So therefore, it's not even close to the same deal. Yeah. If the European Tour doesn't have the Ryder Cup money, good luck, European Tour.
Yeah. That's right. Nathan and Peter, just a final thought on the Ryder Cup. Padraig Harrington was on Off the Ball last week, and I said to him, if you could go ahead in September with thumbs up, but it had to be behind closed doors, public health officials felt it was possible to have the 24 players and the whatever you need around them, that architecture is okay. We can make that work in a safe way, but no crowd. Would you go September this year or would you push it back a year? He wanted to go September this year. Harrington felt, you know what, it would be a good thing to have on television, something for people to watch, get excited about, at the beginnings of a return to normality. So he said, let's fire away and do it in September behind closed doors, if possible. Would you take it, Nathan, behind closed doors this September, or would you wait the 18 months?
I'd wait the 18 months. I understand where he's coming from in terms of, again, we might want that celebration of sport, but I suspect if the Ryder Cup is able to take place, other sports will be able to take place. So we'll be sort of used to having something back. If it was a one-off, great. But the Ryder Cup is probably the one tournament and one of the few sports events, I think, where you have to have the crowd. Like, the Ryder Cup is sort of nothing without the bloody, especially where it's taking place. You want those noisy, bloody Americans getting angry, jeering, cheering, all of that. Like, that's what the Ryder Cup is about. Yeah. Whereas I think you could have an open championship and the drama would probably still come across. I just don't think a Ryder Cup, like, again, the Ryder Cup's a unique sort of event in that it doesn't really matter aside from the 3 days and you suddenly get a little bit into it and you get a bit angry and the Americans piss you off and all of that. Mm. If the crowd isn't there, like, I think if it's behind closed doors golf, all the majors go ahead far before the Ryder Cup. Just push it back 18 months. It's the fairest thing. Like, the thing I saw someone saying, oh, sports people seem to be getting a lot of attention as if they're slightly different to people in the rest of the world. But they are, because it's a short career. You peak at certain times. People should be given the opportunity to qualify for this the same way everybody has previously. Like, for, as I say, like Bernd Wiesberger, like Shane Lowry. Does he get in if Harrington gets 12 picks, or does he get in through qualification? I don't know, but he deserves an opportunity.
Nathan, what about on Twitter, I think it was Adano or Aiden put out the suggestion that if you're not going to have crowds, just mic up all the players and that will make for a brilliant television spectacle.
Like Tiger against Phil.
Okay, but better than that. Yeah.
Man, Samuel, no, Jackson is so cool. He really is. Peter, but, September behind closed doors? Yeah,
I totally agree with Nathan. No chance. It has to be wait. You have to wait. You have to have galleries there. You have to have crowds. You have to have atmosphere. Absolutely waste of time having it with the behind closed doors, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, we're settled on that then. By the way, Graeme McDowell was talking about a couple of things. It was on the PGA Tour website. So he's in the world's top 50 now. Like, he's a massive comeback. He's number 49 in the world. He was certainly hoping that the Masters, which would have gone ahead with the world's top 50 next month, will remember that in effect and freeze the rankings should it be in October. But also he was even saying he's struggling to think about golf. He owns two restaurants. Fionn, you were obviously in one of them recently.
He was saying,
we've two pretty successful restaurants. All of a sudden, we're closing our doors. We barely have enough money to keep them alive for the next 2 or 3 months. You take a successful operation and something like this happens, and basically, you're thinking about whether we'll be able to come out the other side. That's scary. He said, it's taken me 10 days to grasp the magnitude of what we're going through. So that's where he is at the moment.
You just have to dip into his own pockets.
Yeah. That is pretty grim.
Yeah. Also, there was the Brandel Chamblee story as well, Fionn, you wanted to bring us?
Oh, yeah. So Brandel Chamblee gave an interview to Golf Week. And, you know, anybody who follows Brandel Chamblee knows that he is certainly no shrinking violet when it comes to criticizing the uniformity of golf instruction. And he argued that the propagation of flawed swing theory has been stunted by the flood of golf swings and instruction on YouTube, which basically lets you and I kind of fact check their teachers. And anyway, the quote is, I think that people realize the movement patterns and the teaching philosophy of 30, 40 years ago has run into YouTube videos and social media, so on and so forth. And then he goes, the teachers are exposed for their idiocy. But I stood on the range with a prominent teacher who had acolytes all around him, who then went out these acolytes, talk with other acolytes, and then they completely spread flawed philosophy. And then the thing that he got into trouble with, these philosophies finally got bitch slapped by reality. Now, it would have been like, I mean, basically he's taking square aim at modern coaches. He says most of them are, well, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but he's suggesting that they're less than trustworthy in terms of the stuff that they're teaching. But he then, people took umbrage at the use of the term bitch slapped as being not appropriate to these times. And so he put out a tweet saying, I sincerely apologize for an unfortunate choice of words in the Golf Week interview. While the phrase was meant to mean harsh criticism, seeing words in black and white makes you realize different context. Either way, this was a poor choice of words that is offensive, and I apologize. So, but the reason why I pointed you to it, Joe, was that not so much is that like a poor choice of words, which he's apologized for, is that, but Chamblee's point, his broader point, merits noticing, which is like your man Matthew Wolf and the like. Is like a swing, like under the question, with a swing like his, is it durable? Mm. And this is where Chamblee is coming out of. And he's like, because I was watching, I mentioned on last week's pod, I was watching the Open from 1970. And the amount of idiosyncratic swings, nobody had a swing that I would recognize as being a modern swing. Nobody. Not even Jack Nicklaus with his kind of slightly kind of forward swing. But it is interesting, is that like what happens to this very lucrative world of golf coaching, which is all trying to teach a version of this defined swing that has been defined in the last two decades or so. And Chamblee is setting himself squarely against it and obviously pissing off the industry. But he makes no apologies for that. I thought was interesting.
I saw he was saying as well, I read the top 50 teacher list and I laugh, you know, basically. These are not the top 50 teachers in the world. Peter, Chamblee's whole point is that actually golf went through this rubbish phase of teaching where everything was constricted and, you couldn't lift your left heel at all. You couldn't straighten your right leg in the back swing. Everything had to be, torque and tight. And he says, we're now coming out of that. And one of the things which has helped is YouTube. You get to see what Sam Snead did. You get to see what Jack Nicklaus did. You see all the rules, the new rules they broke. And it's actually almost exposed a lot of the terrible teachers out there who were going with all these more restrictive methods. What's your take on kind of the quality of teaching, what people are told generally, and Chamblee's whole point?
I would have to agree with him, to be totally honest with you. You get certain golfers that come out and their hand-eye coordination is so good they could hit it with a broom and still be able to play golf. There's only certain coaches out there that you might suggest that, you know, they know certain aspects of the game and they're very good at it. Other than that, they're kind of guiding their player, more of a mental approach to the game rather than a physical approach to the game. I was always totally against swinging the club the same way for every student. Every student is different. Everybody sees it differently. Everybody feels different. And especially if you put people on camera for the first time, they'll go, oh my God, that's not my swing, is it? And you go, yeah, that's you. And this is what you're doing wrong. And have a look at it. And people are better off pretty much seeing with their own eyes what they're doing rather than somebody telling them what they're doing. And that's why when you see on YouTube how great the golf swings were from the past, and people say, you know, well, why did you swing it that way? Well, there was a certain amount of the technology that they used that you had to swing it that way to create club head speed, to create, you know, getting the club back square and impact. Now the manufacturers are so good at manufacturing equipment that you don't have to have all these idiosyncrasies in your swing to a point. And you can swing the club on a certain path and you know, your club keeps on repeating it. So going back to Bramble's point, I would agree with him. And there's a lot of what I would call, and I saw mainly it when I was out on tour, you would either have your golf swing coaches or you would have your psychologists. And there was a group of psychologists that were out for maybe 5-6 years, and then they all just disappeared, just like that. When players realized that, why am I paying you? Like, you're not doing anything for me. I can do it myself. And golf goes like that. There's no set way to play the game. There is a few kind of small fundamentals that you have to go through. But in general, if your hand-eye coordination is good, you will be a good player, in my eyes.
Doesn't stop him charging £50 a lesson, does it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't give lessons, as Joe well knows. Joe put me well off.
Did Joe not have good hand-eye coordination?
No. He has no. He has no
coordination
aptitude to listen. To learn. He doesn't listen. He sees it his way, and that's it.
Who were the best teachers on the European Tour hanging around the driving ranges? Like, who? I mean, like, who could you say, if you were really struggling of a Friday and did not want to miss the cut and were desperate and you looked down the range for someone to have a look at two or three swings and give you some kind of quick fix, and Damien McGrain wasn't there, who were the teachers?
There was no great quick fixes. Nobody had a quick fix. I would look at some pros being and some teachers being exceptionally good at certain things. Pete Cowan was one of the best short game coaches out there by a long shot, because he understood the fundamentals of short game and how to produce it. You know, one of the best probably short game guys out there was a guy called Brett Rumford, and his short game around was superb. You'll see a lot of his methods being used by most of the other pros around there. Long game, there is no quick fix. There really isn't. You can get away with certain aspects of the game, but long game, there was no quick fix.
I saw Brett Rumford doing one of these sort of Twitter skills challenges yesterday, where he's doing a sort of flop shot while almost on the ground and hit it with his right hand and catch it with his left hand.
I played in the Irish Open Pro-Am with Brett Rumford, and he was an incredibly nice and generous fella. Like, you could ask him anything. He said, look guys, ask me anything at all, happy to help. And he gave us all, or he gave the rest of us, a little short game lesson, which I hasten to add I have not applied to my short game, but still it was it was lovely. And also another time, actually, Pete Cowan gave me a quick look up, and he told me I was hitting 7 irons really, really well. and which made me really happy. And then I went out. It was when the Irish Open was in Portrush, and I went out and I tensed up out of pure fear that I played absolute garbage for the entire 18 holes. So I couldn't apply.
I played with a few fellas in a, was it Royal County Down we played in the Irish Open? It was Nathan, or Joe, did you play? Nathan caddied?
Jer played, I caddied.
Jer. Oh my God.
Okay.
Yeah. So when was that? That's 2015, isn't it?
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just say, lads?
Clearly made an impression.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Pete Cowan, speaking of, who said that he, even though he hadn't taken the test, he had all of the symptoms of COVID-19. So if he does indeed have it, I know people who know him quite well, and he is quite well thought of and quite well regarded. So I have to say, I just wanted to give a shout out to good old. Well, wish him well. Also, as well,
he was saying it was dreadful. You know, he was saying, I'm fit and I'm healthy, but I mean, if somebody of a slightly weaker disposition would really struggle with this. I know that's not breaking news to anybody, but Pete Cowan was saying he was extremely unwell. So wish him all the best.
Yeah. Also, Victor Lang, who is the first PGA Tour player to come down with it. He's a South African guy who played in Mexico and then went back to South Africa. And he was just tested as a precaution when he went to the doctor with a friend of his. And sure enough, he's 26. And so you imagine, you know, 26-year-old professional golfer is again, someone with like pretty good base health. But he's come down with it. And this was, I think, Tuesday, so 2 days ago. And he's under quarantine and his doctor reckons he'll make a full recovery.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, fellas, we're going to wrap things up for another week. Peter, what's the plan? Be around Spawell and I mean, there'll be fresh paint everywhere by the time we're through with this.
Try not to watch these tour tales from the European Tour. That's my goal. If anybody has been listening to them, has anybody seen them from the European Tour? Harrington,
yeah, I've seen a good few of them. Yeah,
Shane Lowry. Right.
I watched the Ian Poulter one. Have you seen the Ian Poulter one?
No.
Yeah.
Is it Ian Poulter? I feel like if this crisis goes on for months, I'm going to be crawling around the floor of my house like a man dying for water, begging to watch Ian Poulter show me how to do a flop shot. And that's a place I really don't want to be.
I would love some of them to tell actually a decent story. Would be great. You know, tell something that, you know, that's actually interesting. Then.
Why don't you step up? No. You're a European Tour player. You need to get the ball rolling.
No, just somebody tell a decent story out there and make somebody laugh.
Lads, what about Peter Lowry's Tour Truths?
Yeah, I think the four
tour
of us
truths would be much better. Yeah, like let somebody tell the truth for a change. It would be great.
It's the lawsuit afterwards I'd be concerned about.
Ah, sure.
You're the man to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe the four of us could sing Imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really good. Brilliant.
I had this great idea for Spawell. I think I told you this before. Or, you know, the Bugsy Malone movie, So You Want to Be a Boxer? I wanted to do it, so we want to be a golfer. So my niece has a recording studio and we all went in to do it, all the pros. And I have that recording on my phone and it is atrocious. So we couldn't even let it out there.
Well, now's the time to get it out.
Perfect time. Peak audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect time.
Yeah. Well, Peter, thank you. Fionn Davenport over in Manchester,
thanks, lads.
Thanks, Nathan, guys. Murphy and children. Yeah, thank you. The invasion has happened.
We just about got there.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk next week. Cheers, lads. Good luck.
See you, lads.
Good luck.
Bye bye.
Thanks.
Golf Weekly on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.